Welcome to Season 3 of Love in Context. This season, we're exploring the life of Jesus, step by step, and uncovering what his story teaches us about loving God and others. Here on Love in Context, we're all about having real conversations about how to live out that love in practical, everyday ways, and understanding the Bible in its full context. We're so glad you're here. Let's dive into Season 3 of Love and Context.
Podcast!
Welcome back! Podcast!
I feel like I've heard
it's
that
a
one.
Podcast.
I feel like you're getting dangerously close. To it.
Okay, here's the thing. I watched a video from Charlie Perth, and he said that you can have up to 4 notes in a row that are similar, and then you have to use like a slightly different note. Otherwise, they're interpolating or something like on each other. And I'm going to hang my hat on that. So there you go.
Go for it.
Love in Context podcast. We are here and we are talking about the life of Jesus and definitely not random videos we saw on music copyright law.
No, because we don't get those in our algorithm.
The problem is you watch one and then the algorithm's like, you want all of these.
Uh huh.
Let me put 3,000 of them in your yeah.
Uh huh.
Neither here nor there, but you guys are getting this on the podcast anyways. You ever go to like fix something like? I need to fix a squeaky hinge or something. And so you look up a video. And it's a weird thing to look up. And then it's like, oh, you like that? Well, here's like 7 more videos of how to fix a squeaky hinge. You're like, yeah, I know I already did that. I don't need more videos on how to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I get a lot of, in my YouTube algorithm, a lot of like, this is how you fix a car. Because I do basic repairs on my cars. And then when there's something like, oh, how do I get this type of bolt unstuck, that's stuck or blah, blah, or whatever. Look at it like, oh, cool, I'll try that. And then it'll be like, you want to know how to replace a transmission on a car you don't have. I'm like, absolutely not.
Absolutely. No. Listen, a little bit, though, with your ADHD, do you kind of want to know?
Well,
a little bit.
Kind of, but it's like, I'm also like, I'm not going to waste my time like learning how to replace a transmission on a 1960-something car I'm never going to own.
That's good.
Right, you know.
All right, so we have been going through the life of Jesus, and this is about halfway through our season, or it's probably a little more than halfway through our season. And so this story, the one we're going with, the portion we're going to cover today is kind of the hinge point that goes from broad meta narrative about Jesus, and really we're going to be focusing on like the last week of his life, and then resurrection, crucifixion, resurrection, and then his ministry that was taking place during those period of time. So we are actually in John 11 today, and it's a fairly lengthy text, so I'm going to read the whole story so we can hear it, and then we're going to come back and talk about some things on some broad levels. But this is the death and resurrection of Lazarus. So starting in verse 1 of chapter 11, it says, "Now a man named Lazarus was sick. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. This Mary, whose brother Lazarus now lay sick, was the same one who poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. So the sisters sent word to Jesus, 'Lord, the one you love is sick.' When he heard this, Jesus said, 'This sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it.' Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days, and then he said to his disciples, 'Let us go back to Judea.' 'But Rabbi,' they said, 'a short while ago the Jews there tried to stone you, and yet you are going back.' That's a good reason to stay away. Jesus answered, 'Are there not 12 hours of daylight? Anyone who walks in the daytime will not stumble, for they see by this world's light. It is when a person walks at night that they stumble, for they have no light.' After he had said this, he went on to tell them, 'Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going there to wake him up.' His disciples replied, 'Lord, if he sleeps, he will get better.' Jesus had been speaking of his death, but his disciples thought he meant natural sleep. So then he told them plainly, 'Lazarus is dead, and for your sake, I am glad that I was not there, so that you may believe, but let us go to him.' Then Thomas, also known as Didymus, said to the rest of the disciples, 'Let us go, that we may die with him.'" Okay, I'm going to pause right there really quick, only because remember these guys, like the oldest is like 21, but most of them are 12 to 14. And he's like, "Lazarus is asleep." And they're like, "Well, listen, just let him take a nap." You can almost audibly hear Jesus in this verse. Like, go read this and you'll hear, you go between them, you hear,
"He's dead."
All right, picking up in verse 17. On his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Now, Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. Lord, Martha said to Jesus, if you had been here, my brother would not have died, but I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Martha answered, I know he will rise again in the resurrection of the last day. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live, even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this? Yes, Lord, she replied. I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who has come into this world. After she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary aside. The teacher is here, she said, and is asking for you. When Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet entered the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who had been with Mary in the house comforting her noticed how quickly she got up and went out, they followed her, supposing that she was going to the tomb to mourn there. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in his spirit and troubled. Where have you laid him? He asked. Come and see, Lord, they replied. Jesus wept. By the way, that's every youth kid's favorite verse. Mm-hmm. Super easy to memorize. And then the Jews said, see how he loved him. But some of them said, could he who has opened the eyes of the blind man not have kept this man from dying? Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. Take away the stone, he said. But Lord, said Martha, the sister of the dead man, by this time there is a bad odor, for he has been in there 4 days. Then Jesus said, did I not tell you that? What's that?
I'd say so, yeah.
Yeah. Then Jesus said, did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God? So they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of those standing here, that they may believe that you sent me. When he had said this, Jesus called in a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. The dead man came out, his hands and his feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth wrapped around his face. Jesus said to him, take off the grave clothes and let him go. Okay, we're going to stop there. It's quite the story, right? There's a ton of things going on there. So I think probably the first thing to note here is that the disciples do pick up on something that is really important and that Jesus is aware of too. This event is going to be a turning point in his ministry. Because he's been going around and he's been proclaiming the good news. He's been healing and he's even brought people back from perceived death before. Like I'm saying perceived as that like people thought they were dead, but like he brought them back to life. But they haven't been like decomposing kind of thing. He's going back to a place where the Jews already tried to stone him before. And he's going and he's basically, we'll get into it, but he claims to be God. And then he literally has the power over death.
Yeah.
And so he's really setting himself up for a lot of conflict, which is going to happen all through the next following week. I can't remember if it's the next week or it's the next couple of weeks in his life, but it's going to culminate in Calvary.
There's debate on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. There's some different timeline things going on here. So, but it's going to be the next couple of weeks. And so he's going to be, the destination is Calvary. He's going to be in Jerusalem. He's going to be in a lot of conflict. And so right at the very beginning, John says that this story happens and he just goes into a ton of detail. Now, if you've read some stories, like they have very little detail on what's going on. And yet this story, there's so much going on in the story that John puts in there. And I think one of the things that we've talked about in the past is when biblical authors do that, pay attention. Like they don't put things there just for fun. So I want to talk about a couple of high level things that I think are really interesting that I think are interesting for just discussion purposes. Lazarus is a name that we're very familiar with, but the etymology is actually from Eleazar. And it also comes from the Etzer, which we've talked about in the book of Genesis, which is God helping. And so the name is, it's not an arbitrary name. It actually invites divine interaction. In Psalm vocabulary, if you look at like Psalm 30 or Psalm 116, it talks about God is going to help you or he's going to rescue you from Sheol, which is going to be the afterlife in their conversation in the book of Psalms. And so the Etzer is coming to actually bring you life. So literally the story starts with a guy by the name of Eleazar, right? Lazarus is how we would pronounce it in English. And he's helped by God, but for most of the story, he remains dead. And then the tension then amplifies because now Jesus is going to come and call the helper back to life. Mm-hmm. As opposed to in the Psalms, the helper is asking for God to come when they're close to death. He's actually calling them back from the brink of death. It's just interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. We won't dive into this too much. There's actually a little bit of debate of whether Lazarus was his real name or they actually used the name Lazarus here to illustrate that exact point.
Well, and there's good conversation with that because how many times in this it says, says Martha, the brother of Lazarus, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so they're making, he's making it very clear, like you should know who he's talking about. Like, so there's a lot of qualifiers. So totally legitimate.
Yeah. It's, and like, again, don't spend a ton of time on it. If you want to go research that, go do it. It's a fun little rabbit trail.
Well, and it says, in, there's a statement here that says, Jesus, Lazarus, whom you love, right? And this language is actually very evocative of Genesis when it talks about when God comes to Abraham with Isaac and he says, I want you to take your son, whom you love. It's same words used in Greek. When we have the Septuagint, they go back and they translate. This is what the sages used. Same word that's being used in this text. It would have been the text of John for the Greek Old Testament. Yeah. And so he uses the same word here. Now, I think it's interesting that it would tie to Abraham because Abraham had a guy who was a servant that there's a debate whether or not that's actually his name. And his name was Eliezer because he was a helper, right? And his job was to go and find the bride for the beloved son.
Yeah.
Right? So there's some interesting imagery going on here.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And then you get verse 4 and 5. One of the interesting things here is usually if you hear of a good friend in this culture, a good friend, or in this case, this would be someone who's like considered family, is sick on their deathbed, like usually you would go to them right away.
Yeah.
Right. And but then verse 5, it says, although Jesus loved Martha, Mary, and Lazarus, he stayed where he was for the next 2 days.
Yeah.
So, and his disciples, even though they were young boys at the time, like they would have known that this tradition, this custom of, okay, your friend is sick, we need to go.
Right.
And Jesus is like, no, we're going to stay.
Yeah. It's a very, it's a practice that now is called sitting Shiva when somebody is either sick or dying or has died. So these Jews that come from Jerusalem and they're sitting with them, they're just sitting with them in their chaos.
Yeah.
Right. And even Thomas mentions this. He says, well, let's go that we die too. They're not actually going to die. You're going to sit there with the person as they mourn. You're going to just be there because mourning shouldn't be done in isolation. It should be done in community. It should be done around people who love you and support you. And they're not trying to like fix things. They're just trying to be there with you, mourn with you.
Yeah. But before we even get to that, like the sitting Shiva part, like you have the disciples being like, okay, you want to go back, but they just tried to kill you.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but when someone like tries to like comes after me and wants to kill me, I don't typically go back to that spot.
Well, last time somebody tried to kill me, that actually has not happened to me.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, exactly. You know, it's bold to say the least.
Right.
I mean, even when Paul was like getting run out of towns and rocks thrown at him and all these things, he would go on a missionary journey. He'd come back a few years later, right? Like he's coming back.
One of my favorite stories in the book of Acts was the disciples like were stoned within an inch of their life, thrown out of the city. And then when they could get up and walk, they got up and they went back into the city and started preaching the gospel again.
Yep.
And they were, it's just one of those like, nice try.
Nice try. So it's interesting. So there's conversation about Lazarus and Mary, Martha, about whether or not Lazarus was actually one of the lepers that at some point Jesus had healed as well, because Bethany specifically means house of the poor or house of affliction, and so it may have been a leper colony. It also does seem like they're people of means because like Lazarus is being placed in a tomb. They have a house. They have like a bunch of different things like that. Even the sister, Mary, who breaks the perfume, seems to have money to be able to pay for that.
Yeah.
Right.
They said that was half year's wages.
Yeah. It's like, it's like a year's wages. Yeah. Right. And so like, so they have some amount of money and you know, these people, obviously it's entirely possible they could have been funding Jesus' ministry too. But they talk about the fact that Bethany, it actually literally means house of affliction. And I love that Jesus, Jesus brings resurrection to the house of affliction, right? The miracle proximity to Jerusalem makes it like this final, like, it's like this push is like resurrection is coming to the least of these, to the very house of affliction, resurrection comes, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, they're like, okay, are you sure you want to go? Like, rocks are hard.
Well, and then Jesus's response was, well, here's the deal. Like, if we're traveling, like, very logical, he's like, if we're going during the day, there's people who like us and we'll be fine.
Yeah.
Right. And he's like, we just won't travel at night. We'll just travel during the day.
Yeah.
It's fine.
And continuing this whole thing that John's been doing through his gospel about light and dark and, you know, like that you should be a person who travels in the light rather than the person who travels in the dark. Yep. And so they delay going. He delays going 2 days, which then puts him there 4 days after death. Now, why is 4 days significant? I think you've probably had this taught at some point. A lot of people have heard this, but in case you have not, Jewish ideas at that time is that the spirit did stay around the body for around 3 days before it departed. So Jesus is actually legitimately like stepping in, like taking a step into like their understanding.
Yeah.
So that there's no conversation about, well, the spirit was hovering above it, and then Jesus called it back in. No, he wants to make sure they know that he was dead. Spirit was gone, you know, and he called it back. That's a good one. That Jesus is actually arriving when all hope is gone, right? When all hope is gone, Jesus is arriving. And then there's that thing that says, hey, are you sure you really want to roll back that stone? Because it stinks.
Yeah.
He stinketh is my, I think it's King James version. He stinketh. And, it's just one of my favorite translations of that, you know? And so like, it's a very poignant, like if anything else was not nailing it on the head, he's literally decomposing now. Right. Are you sure you want us to roll this back? And so like there is an intention why Jesus is doing it. He says, this is not going to end in death. Doesn't mean that Lazarus isn't going to die.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is a very, very important word for like us, is a lot of times God is talking, like speaking into us. And through the resurrection of Jesus, our life no longer ends in death. But all of us are going to die someday.
Yeah. Yeah, you jump down to verse 20, and I'm skipping the other verses because we literally just talked about them.
Yeah.
But Martha got word that Jesus is coming, and she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed in the house. Interesting side note, right? Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if you'd only been here, my brother would not have died. But even now, I know that the Lord, that God will give you whatever you ask. So there's this tension in Mary's comment, right? This tension of like, if you were here, he'd still be with us.
Yeah.
But I know you can still do great things.
Yeah.
Right? Or not Mary, Martha's comment.
Yeah.
Mary's at the house. But there's that tension, right?
It's really hard not to interchange their names because, you know, when you, it's kind of like if you have like two people that are always hanging out together. I think Matthew Nunley calls us Benzer.
Yeah.
Right? It's hard sometimes when you're trying to.
Yeah. So there's this tension, and it's this exact tension we've prayed in our lives before too, right? Lord, if you just showed up, this would have happened. But I know you're still capable. Right? I mean, have you ever said that prayer?
Many times.
Right?
I mean, you're talking about like today?
Yeah.
It's because.
Right? There's that tension where it's like, okay, Lord, this isn't going the way I want, but I know you're still in control. Right? This isn't, you're not providing how I want you to, but I know you're still in control. You're not doing this how I want you to, but I know you're still in control. Right? The expectation from Mary and Martha was they sent word, and as the expectation would have been, as soon as Jesus got that word, he would have been on his way.
Yeah. Well, and especially, you know, like, or he got the word and he just says that he's healed. Like they've seen it happen.
Yeah.
Right. We're talking about Jesus. We're not talking about some rando, right? Yeah. Like Jesus is the guy who's like, oh, your son's healed.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Jesus's response, your brother will rise.
Yeah.
And Martha, yes, he will rise when everyone else rises on that last day.
Yeah.
Right. Still that, like, I believe, but I'm still struggling to understand what's going on.
Jesus, I'm fully aware that in the future, in our eschatological hope, that he will rise at the end of days, right? Yeah. I'm fully aware of that. And that is hopeful. Thank you for reminding me of that. He's like, no, I am the resurrection and life, right? He makes a statement. He says, I am the resurrection and life. And it is absolutely, if you're like, man, that sounds a lot like I am that I am, you should be hearing that because there's seven I am statements in the Gospel of John. But one of the things that I really, what he's saying here, he says, it's not I can perform resurrection, right? They already know Jesus can perform resurrection. because there's been kids that have died. There's been people who are on the brink of death. They already know Jesus can perform resurrection. He is resurrection. Mm-hmm. Like Jesus is resurrection. He is life. Mm-hmm. He's not performing it. That's what he is. That's who he is. And it's an extension of like, and so it's going to be really important. He does not bring life. He is life. Mm-hmm. And that there's a really big difference between that and this like abstract idea of like, because, okay, like for example, when the disciples get sent out in 12 and 72, mm-hmm. they're told to raise the dead, cast out demons, preach the good news. Not in that order, by the way. Mm-hmm. I'm saying in the wrong order. To heal the sick and you know, but raise the dead is one of them, mm-hmm. right? So there's already a power over life that they've seen demonstrated in the lives of the disciples as they go and they do the ministry yeah. of Jesus. But Jesus is not saying that they're going to do resurrection. He says, I am resurrection.
Yeah.
It's much more significant, and I mm-hmm. and I the only reason I'm saying it so many times is I think we move so quickly past it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then he says, "Everyone who lives in me and believes in me will never die." That sounds like another verse in John.
Mm-hmm. Sounds a lot like John 3.
Yeah. Right. You have this message where he's referring back to John 3, where he's like, I am the resurrection and the life. Anyone who believes in me will have life even after dying, and whoever believes in me will never die. Right? That takes what it does is, and we've had people interpret this being like, okay, well, is he talking about physical death? I was like, no, like we're all going to physically die mm-hmm. someday, right? But what it does is it removes that fear of physically dying.
Death is not the end.
Mm-hmm. Right?
There's a song that says death is just a doorway into resurrection life. Mm-hmm. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, we'll get there. You don't need to be in a hurry to get there. So he says that to her and he says, do you believe this? And she makes a statement. She says, yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who is to come into this world. By the way, I've heard somebody else say that too. Just last time it was Peter.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now it's in John is placing it into the mouth of a woman who is calling. So there's been Peter
mm-hmm.
and now there's a woman, which is not well thought of in their society, mm-hmm. right? As far as like being able to be a spokesman.
Yeah.
But John is going to repeatedly point out that God, Jesus is using women to proclaim profound truths,
mm-hmm.
that he is the Messiah. He is the Son of God. He is, you know,
mm-hmm.
in this capacity, which is just a really cool, like, we're like, oh, well, Peter got it. Yeah. So did Martha.
Mm-hmm.
Even in her struggle, even in her doubt, she gets it because she's like, she believes him,
mm-hmm.
but she still hasn't seen Lazarus come back from the dead. So like, it's still an intellectual and hopeful belief.
So here's, and then you have a couple interesting things that happen here. She returned to Mary. She called Mary aside from the mourners and told her the teacher is here and wants to see you. So Mary immediately left and went to him. Yeah. So this also begs the question about Martha.
Mm-hmm.
So when she heard Jesus was coming, she hadn't seen him yet. When she heard that, she left, assuming that she was with the mourners at the mourners' table. Mm-hmm. It is her brother, after all, who died, right? She left the mourners' table to go see Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been a move that would not have been well thought of mm-hmm. by anybody. They've been like, no, we're mourning. The teacher needs to come to us.
Yeah.
Instead, she goes, no, we're mourning, so I'm going to go to Jesus.
Yeah. I feel like that'll preach for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did, I made a note here that I actually thought was really interesting. So this, because we're doing a study through the Psalms right now at our church. Well, mm-hmm. Wisdom literature in general. But
yeah.
Lament Psalms tend to follow a pattern of there's a complaint, there's waiting, there's a divine action, and then there's praise.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And in this one, we have Martha's, their lament is, if you had been here.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's this faith statement, I know that even mm-hmm. now.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the divine disclosure from Jesus. He says, I am the resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's going to be the actual event and this party afterwards. Mm-hmm. Right? This praise of like God's intervention.
Yeah.
And it's just interesting that this actually follows very similar to what we see in Psalms of Lament. This story mm-hmm. does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you have this weird thing that Jesus kind of does here in verse 30. Mm.
Jesus did a weird thing.
Yeah. Jesus stayed outside the village at the place where Martha met him. It's an odd detail because if Jesus was good friends, as I say earlier, why would he not just go to the House of Mourning and sit with them?
Because he's a bad... No, I'm just kidding. He's not a bad friend.
Right? So, and the text doesn't specifically say why he does this, right? Yeah. So there's lots of implications we could put there, but...
Yeah, I mean, you can have some... You can have, like, because he knows where they need to go.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. they want to be at the house. He's like, no, we need to go to the tomb.
Because
I know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, the crazy thing is, to your point, is it is weird. It's a weird situation. Like, that's not normal. Mm-hmm. So Jesus says, hey, come out and join me, right? And then ultimately has this conversation with Mary, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's basically almost the exact same conversation that he has with Martha, right? And he sees her weeping, and then the Jews that came along with her that were weeping, because they're like, oh, maybe she's going to mourn at the tomb. We should probably go with her.
Yeah.
Right? By the way, that's exactly what they should have done.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's what good friends do. He was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. Where have you laid him? And then they say, come and see, Lord. And so then he goes, and it says Jesus wept. Mm-hmm. So Jesus knows what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
He knows that their sorrow is going to turn to joy. And yet in the moment, he still feels their emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Right? John, when he wrote this, chose the word, I'm not a Greek speaker, so please forgive me. It's dakryo, yes, to shed tears silently, rather than the kaleo, which is to wait. Mm-hmm. Others would wail kaleotis at the tomb, and Jesus' tears are, however, restrained. They're intimate, yet profoundly human.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not just crying out in the same way that the mourners are crying out. It's personal tears.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And, in a Hebrew worldview, often tears are going to actually precede divine intervention.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about in 2 Kings 25, he says, I have seen your tears. I will heal you.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
I have seen your tears.
Mm-hmm. Then there's this conversation that happens with the rest of the community that's there. Right? Like, and it's really short, and we often breeze over this one, but it's really good to kind of sit there for a minute. The people who were standing nearby said, see how much he loves them.
Mm-hmm.
But some said, this man healed the blind. He could have, couldn't he have kept Lazarus from dying?
Yeah.
So referring to, like, it's been 4 days. There's nothing he can do now. Why is he here? Why was he late? Like, there's this tension that's going on that we often overlook.
Where the teacher shows up and he's expressing emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And there's two groups of people that are like, man, look how much he cares. And other people are like, what took him so long?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And then one of the emotions that Jesus expresses, which we breeze over this too, is Jesus was still angry as he arrived at the tomb.
Yeah. There's going to be various ways to translate that. I think angry is probably appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Don't think of it as the way we get angry.
Yeah.
Right? It's a different word.
Mm-hmm.
Deeply troubled is sometimes how they'll express it.
Mm-hmm.
He's deeply troubled. So what's he deeply troubled about?
Mm-hmm.
Probably these conversations that are going on.
Yeah.
Right? That something profound is happening. A loss is happening, and they're sitting here talking, talking smack.
There's another time in the Bible where this term angry is used, describing a helper that is going to show up.
Mm-hmm.
And that is Moses at the burning bush. Because when Moses is at the burning bush, he lists his 5 reasons why he's not able to go, his last one being like, I just don't want to. And God, in his anger, sent him Aaron, a helper, to speak for him.
Oh, that's silly. I mean, there's just helper all over the place, huh?
Uh-huh.
His Etzer moving all over this place.
Yeah, right. And so you have kind of that same language happening here, where you have Jesus was angry when he arrived at the tomb, the cave where the stone was still rolled across the entrance. Roll the stone aside, Jesus told them.
Yeah, and then of course they have this conversation about the stench. We talked about like this whole thing of like 4 days, significance of that. Then Jesus makes a prayer. He talks to God openly, and I just love that he says, yeah, I'm doing this so that they can hear, because I already know that you heard me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? I already know. You and I are already talking, which, by the way, I love. You and I are already having a conversation about this.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm saying this so that they know what you're doing here. Mm-hmm. Right?
It almost sounds like it almost sounds, I mean, working in a school district, it almost sounds like that teacher-student conversation. I was like, so I know that you swung a fist at this kid, right?
That feels a little real. Did that happen today? So, okay.
No. But, right, it's like I want you to know that I know that you did this, right?
But they don't know that we know that they know.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, that's what this feels like a little bit, where it's like, where he's talking to God. He's like, all right, God, we've had this conversation. I'm saying it out loud so they know that I've had this conversation with you and I'm not, you know, messing around.
Then Jesus is going to say, Lazarus, come out. By the way, this is going to echo and mirror in a very similar way to how creation is spoke into mm-hmm. existence, which is not surprising because John 1:1, in the beginning was the word was with God, the word was God, right?
Yep.
Jesus, the Logos, the Lazarus then sign, then reenacts Genesis through the lens of new creation, right? Mm-hmm. Life summoned from the darkness of the tomb and the cosmos once called forth from the void, or tohu vavohu, to go all the way back to mm-hmm. Genesis, right? Yeah. And so then this will be reminiscent of everything that's been declared along. What was declared cosmically is now enacted personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That the God who speaks the universe into existence also calls Lazarus out of a tomb. Mm-hmm. And I would say in a very similar way, he does the same thing to us.
Yeah.
When we're called by name, mm-hmm. like that's the Logos speaking our name and calling us to himself.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And the beautiful thing too, is he removed the obstacle,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, imagine if I once heard a comedian say, he's like, imagine if Jesus called Lazarus out of the tomb, but forgot to move, roll the stone away.
Yeah.
Right? Jesus is like, no, we need to remove the obstacle, right? It's not working.
Because he's wrapped up in linen, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Jesus is like, no, we need to remove the obstacle away, and I'm going to call you into life.
Well, and then the thing is that, because there's so much going on here in imagery mm-hmm. that's going to carry on into later. As well, because like when he comes out, he's going to say unbind him. Of course, then he's going to have an exodus or a release, or may even connect it to Isaiah 58:6, which says to loose the chains of injustice, mm-hmm. right? The year of favor, God's freeing power.
Yeah.
But you know, in a very real sense, this little example is very much of what Jesus does in our life too, is that when we are called by name, he calls us to him. We trust in his faithfulness, which is John talks about, or Paul talks about in Galatians.
Yeah.
We trust in the faithfulness of Jesus Christ, but he calls us by name, and he's already swung the door open.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that we have to choose is whether or not we're going to respond to the call.
Mm-hmm.
The door's already swung wide open.
Yeah.
All you have to do is trust Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Trust that him calling you brings you back to life.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, that's a literal thing that happened, but it's also a metaphorical thing that happens.
Yep.
Right? And I think that sometimes in the way we talk about faith, maybe the way we talk about following Jesus, we have a lot of like prerequisites we put on people. Mm-hmm. It's like to follow Jesus, the tomb's open.
Yeah. I mean, look at this whole conversation.
Yeah.
You have Jesus being like, I'm going to raise this guy from the dead.
Mm-hmm.
And then being like, oh, this like tension of like, do I believe? Yes, I believe in you, but can you actually do it? And then Jesus being like, do you believe in me? And then, yes, I believe in you. Okay, roll the stone away. Lazarus comes to life. How many times has Jesus done that for us?
So many.
Where he's like, I'm going to make this happen in your life. And you're like, I don't know if that's going to happen. Yes, Lord, I believe in you. He's like, do you believe?
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, yes, God, I believe. And then obstacle away. And then he fulfills it.
Yeah.
Right? Right, you see that happen over and over and over again in Scripture. Like this is a theme that you can mm-hmm. actually carry into the Old Testament. You can carry further into the New Testament, and you can put it on your life too.
Right? I think because how many times have you had a conversation with somebody who's struggling to trust Jesus, right? Or like for the first time,
mm-hmm.
right? To make Jesus the centerpiece of their life,
mm-hmm.
right? And they say, well, you know, I've got this, and like you know, I can't get past these things. I was like, dude, door's open.
Mm-hmm.
All you got to do is walk through.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're talking about all the things that are keeping you out of the house. Door's open.
Yeah.
All you got to do is walk through and want to be part of the house.
Yep.
And it's like you literally trust that door was open for you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right. And you trust that the person who opened it can take care of everything that you've got going on.
Mm-hmm. Which he can.
Yeah. Technically already did.
Mm-hmm.
And so like I think one, reading these stories literally is really important to understand mm-hmm. the actual story. But then it's really important that you understand what happened here, because Paul and the New Testament writers are going to talk about a lot of what Jesus does here when they're talking about the redemptive work mm-hmm. of
Are you the saying Spirit. There's intentionality?
In no, the I would never say that. Gospel? I would never say that. I think it is actually an important conversation to have mm-hmm. because in some ways there's a conversation, and this is a way that it has been said. I don't know if it's necessarily 100% accurate, but people say they accept Jesus as their Savior and Paul as their Lord. Mm-hmm. In other words, they love to accept Jesus, but they actually want to find the rules with Paul. Problem is, what Paul is doing is he's explaining what Jesus did to a Gentile audience in mm-hmm. different circumstances.
Yeah.
And so one of the, like, I guess the reason I mention it is that I want you have to, the gospels have to be here. Mm-hmm. They have to be here. Like what Jesus did, so that when he's talking to different cultures, you're like, oh, I see what Paul's doing. I see how it's applying to what they're dealing with in their culture. Mm-hmm. Like he is applying to them what Jesus already did and who he is. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, is exactly what we're supposed to do when we bring Jesus, is we yep. help. You know, I mean, if you have a person who, for example, is caught up in anything, I can't even think of a specific example. That's how fried my brain is at the end of a day.
Mm-hmm. I hear you.
Right?
You as listeners, fill in the blank.
And I get to know them because I'm in relationship with them. I build a relationship with them and I talk to them and I share my life of Jesus with them, which, by the way, is how discipleship and bringing people to Jesus should work. Mm-hmm. I'm actually going to take concepts and I say, hey, you know how you're dealing with this? Can I tell you a story of Jesus and like yeah. why you don't have to do that anymore?
Yeah.
Right. And rather than being like, well, you need to understand this, I said, let me explain how Jesus does this in your life. Mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
For the things you understand, it can be incredibly helpful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. This is a cool story. I love this story. It's, it is definitely the turning point, because right after this, in fact, if you read your headings that come right after, it says the plot to kill Jesus, right? Mm-hmm. Because he's becoming a problem for the religious elites.
Yeah.
Right. For the people who, want to control power, he's becoming a problem.
Yeah.
Because he has power. Right.
Yeah.
He's walking in the power and authority of God the Father. Mm-hmm. And that is problematic for people in authority that want to grasp power, which, by the way, that can be a problem when you're walking in the what Jesus calls you to be. Mm-hmm. Be. People who want to grab power might have issues with you.
Yep.
Best way to, like, if you're going to take Jesus' example, the best way to deal with them is to love them, have conversations with them, and be willing to literally put your life on the line for them.
Yep.
It's a crazy, crazy upside down kingdom, and we're going to be talking about it over the next 20 episodes, because there's a lot of interesting things going on there. Mm-hmm. Jesus is going to have he's going to confront Rome. He's going to confront the religious institutions. Ouch, it's going to hurt us.
Yep.
Because I think we have to take some honest looks at what he has to say about the institution of what the temple had become. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to spend, I think we have 4 weeks where we're going to be talking about a couple weeks through the crucifixion, the trial, and all those things, because there's just so much going on there.
Yeah.
But this is where it all starts.
Yep.
It's the start of the passion. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yep. Well, until next time.
Until next time. And that's a wrap for today's episode of Love and Context. We hope this conversation encouraged you and gave you fresh insights into how we can better love God and others through the powerful truths of the Bible. We'd love to hear from you. Send your questions, thoughts, or suggestions to loveandcontext@gmail.com. Your feedback means the world to us and helps shape future episodes. Stay connected with us on social media for updates, behind-the-scenes content, and additional resources. You can find us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and Facebook at Love and Context. Be sure to hit that follow button and join our growing community. Thanks for being part of the Love and Context family. Remember, love is at the heart of it all. Until next time, keep seeking wisdom, embracing love, and living out your faith in today's world.